Extra, extra, extra. Go guy, go guy, go guy. Welcome to Revolutionary Podcast Utena, where one kind of expert and one total newbie watch Revolutionary Girl Utena and talk about it for your enjoyment. Hi, I'm Randy.
And I'm Jared.
Hey, Jared, how you doing? What's new with you, man?
Just watched 3 episodes of Utena, and it was wild. I don't think it's the same series. I think you played a trick on me.
The bold switcheroo. I got you into one show, and then psych! We're doing a different one.
Switcheroo or switcher-moo?
Ooh, dang. I wish I would have come up with something that good. Oh, it's such a different energy we're bringing to this episode.
This is a whole new show. I mean, people who've seen this and they're listening to this podcast are probably like, well, just wait until you get to that season 2, that second arc of the series. Because, yeah, I mean, there's some stuff that happens in the first arc. And, it's pretty interesting at times.
Yeah.
But, it's all kind of like generic stuff. And then, boom. this is what everyone's waiting for?
I had exclaimed while we were watching it, you were just, what is happening? And I just shouted, welcome to the show, Jared. I'm so glad you made it.
Yeah. My first note was that there was more mystery and intrigue happening in 30 seconds than half of the series we've already watched. What?
Which I don't think is a jab at the first arc. It's just, it just hits the ground running.
The first arc is its own thing. This is definitely, it's very special.
Oh, indeed. If you are listening to this show and you don't know what it's about, we're going to be going through the whole show of Revolutionary Girl Utena and the film Adolescence of Utena. And we're going to be talking about it in depth. We're not going to be talking about spoilers from later on in the series because Jared hasn't seen it yet. So we'll just be talking about it on the episode per episode basis. If you'd like to watch the show with us, and I highly recommend you do, you can find it all on Nozomi Entertainment's YouTube channel, except for the movie. Same thing on Funimation Now and now Crunchyroll. But, of course, you can always pick up the Blu-rays or the DVDs released by Nozomi Entertainment on Right Stuff, Amazon, or wherever you buy your anime. We've got 3 episodes we're going to be going through this episode of the podcast, and I think we could just jump right into it, don't you think?
I agree.
Okay, well, then let's get into it. Episode 14, The Boys of the Black Rose, that aired originally on July 2nd, 1997. Jared, would you do me the honors of telling the people what this episode was about?
Oh, yes. Here is our summary. Anthea reveals that she pays weekly visits to her brother Akio, the acting headmaster of the school, but the relationship between the siblings is far from ordinary. Akio is engaged to high school student Kanai, daughter of the ill headmaster. Kanai loves Akio deeply, but feels distant from him and cannot bring herself to like Anthy. Meanwhile, the Black Rose Seminar appears in Otori Academy, led by high school genius Mikage, as a front for creating duelists capable of defeating Utena. Instead of winning Anthy, he wants to kill and replace her with an ill boy in order to save his life. Mikage preys upon Kanai's fears to create the first Black Rose duelist. Also, there's spoilers in that. I didn't know that yet.
Oh, I thought they had gone over that.
I didn't realize he was ill.
Oh.
I thought he was just there.
Oh. Well,
but you know what? The first viewing is that first viewing thing where you only see like half of the show,
that's
probably.
That's true.
That's why I have you here.
That's exactly. To give people some background so that they can, appreciate the show more by knowing who is behind the things that they love. This episode was storyboarded by Mamoru Hosoda. I would say, need I say more, but in case you don't know who that is, he's a rather prolific anime film director who has done many things like Boy and the Beast, Girl Who Leapt Through Time, Summer Wars, Mirai, and just a ton of different things, with a new movie, Belle, coming out soon. So, kind of a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
This episode was directed by Yukio Okazaki, who would direct other shows and episodes like stuff like Berserk, Bleach, Death Note, and Hellsing Ultimate. It was written by Yoji Enokido, who's kind of like the head writer of the series in general, and animation supervised by Akemi Hayashi, who worked on things like Banana Fish, Cashier and Sins, Rebuild of Evangelion, Gurren Lagann, and more. Mm. And before we dive into the start of this new arc, I want to go over the episode commentary for this from series director Ikuhara, who says, "I saw a certain horror movie when I was in middle school. There was a secret mortuary, an underground chamber, and the dead were electronically transmitted, still in their coffins, to the other world, where they were forced into slavery. The movie's story was utterly absurd, but the division of the world into opposite poles of living and dead felt real to me somehow. Our world has been spoken of in bipolar fashion for ages. In my student days, there was a popular book that compared the affluent with the non-affluent, and sorted everything into categories called loaded and broke. It was the bubble era, and the aim of the book was probably to get a laugh by saying, they call us wealthy, but our lifestyle is practically in the trash can. But for some reason, I couldn't laugh. Years later, the phrase, the winning side, was popular in media. I thought it was horrid, and sure enough, people started using the opposite phrase, the losing side, as a masochistic joke. I still couldn't laugh, though. One day, a girl I saw on TV said, there are only two types of people in this world, the ones who are chosen and the ones who aren't chosen. That gave me a start. To not be chosen is to die, said the girl. I decided to try my hand at that. The Black Rose arc. All right, buddy. Sure.
I wonder what that certain horror movie was that they saw in middle school.
Right. I'm going to have to look this up. This sounds bizarre.
Very bizarre.
Speaking of bizarre, you have a lot of notes from this episode because we got thrown a ton of stuff.
Oh, my.
So let's go point by point what you got here and let's talk about it.
Yeah. My first note was how I started this recording of this episode was more mystery and intrigue in 30 seconds than half the series. And what I mean by that is, like, the art is a little different. It's pretty dark. You know, there's got these mysterious characters talking about all this stuff that's going on with the Black Rose. And, you know, this show, it had its moments so far, and it got a little dark near the end there. But this is like a whole different anime now. So there's that. They reveal that Anthy has a brother. That's right. Akio, who we met before. I'm not really sure if I realized that was Anthy's brother or not, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, we weren't explicitly told his relation to anything. So yep. This is our formal introduction that is her brother.
Yeah. And if we remember correctly, Akio has got something up his sleeve because he was talking about that prince or talking to the prince character. There's something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was this episode where Anthy was saying things like, oh, don't tell Akio about like me being the Rose Bride. He doesn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
it's like I'm pretty sure he's like orchestrating some stuff.
I mean, he was narrating the recaps and, you know, yes, talking to the prince, and it's clear he's in the know somewhere.
You never know. Maybe he's being pulled along. He's definitely a shady dude. We met a blonde girl. I had the note in here as blonde girl for a while, and then I realized her name is Kanai.
Yes.
And she's engaged to Akio.
Right. An arranged marriage, I believe, that she mentions.
Yes.
That her father chose him.
Yes, the mysterious headmaster who is ill or gone or something,
mm-hmm.
and we have... Akio in standing in his place, it seems.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But none of that really matters. He just seems to be like some dude.
who lives in a planetarium, basically.
Right. Really cool background designs in those moments.
Oh, yeah.
So we get a quick shot of the rose again. So the reason why I'm putting that in there is because... Like, there's a flashing moment where they show the rose one more time.
Mm.
And that's when I wrote, mysterious rose! Because really, I mean, that's what it is.
True.
But yeah, it's like there was like a conversation happening and they showed the rose real quick. And I'm thinking, oh man, there's a lot of symbolic imagery happening with this. Like, but then we learn of a term called the Circle of the Black Rose. And I can't really fully say if I understand what that is yet. I mean, they kind of talk about it a little bit in these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
If that was like the hundred men who were down there in this, I know we haven't quite gotten there yet, but these 100 guys inside this place, like,
mm-hmm.
is that the Circle of the Black Rose, or is this like the new like the version of the student council? I'm not 100% sure, but
if I'm remembering correctly, it's kind of like the new student council sort of thing. It's the code of the Rose Seal, but now it is the Circle of the Black Rose.
Mm, something like that.
Right. But I mean, it's spooky. We've got 100 boys from the school who apparently were buried and died here. And it's spooky.
Yeah, we don't know why they died or if what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I closely observed this episode, so I took a few extra notes where we learned that the character's name, who hangs out with a bunch of dead people, is Soji.
Mm-hmm.
And that Soji, you and I were talking about how, well, actually we didn't talk about it. Thinking about a different episode with the Shinkansen. Mm-hmm. But Soji was gifted a hot spring resort gift. And that just made me think of Japanese onsens, so and how I'd love to go to a premium onsen right now and just get a hot bath, but not with Soji, because that dude is, you know what, actually, that'd be an interesting conversation.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it all leads into, I think, one of the most interesting parts of this kickoff of this new arc, which I call the psychological interview down the elevator.
Yes!
So
I love it so much. Just the neat imagery of everything, of like the butterfly that's pinned in the frame on the wall, and then as they continue to go through their traumas and things, it reverts into a cocoon and then into a caterpillar and finally just the leaf.
Right.
It's so interesting and just very like the tension that's there. Man, oh gosh, I could gush about just that scene all
the
time.
It was really creepy. It was interesting. And it's like they had new music playing or something as well. Mm-hmm. At the same time that this was happening, or just before it, there was a moment where Soji was talking to someone. And I thought it was a purple-haired girl. Mm-hmm. To make them into the true Rose Bride. And I wrote purple-haired girl ? Because I wasn't sure. And we do learn that it is not a girl, because they even talk about it, because they're like, no, wouldn't I be like the
Rose Groom?
The Rose Groom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We did get their name, but I don't have it.
It is Mamiya. Mamiya.
Mamiya. But, yeah, I mean, they talk about the 100 dudes that died down there, and that their rose rings go from pink to black once they die.
Yes.
So they all had rose rings for some reason?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that purple-haired, I wrote now, boy, so Mamiya, stabs... Okay, so basically we see the elevator scene because Kanai is going down there, right?
Right.
And... We really should talk about what happens each time anybody goes down that elevator, is that they kind of like digress into this, they're peeling back the onion. We're getting some emotional layers,
mm-hmm.
And they're being guided towards what makes them either like fearful or scared or upset or angry.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, all of that just is like happening all at the same time. It's like within 5 minutes, it's like a huge info dump. So I was just like, note after note, I'm just writing like, oh my God, I can't forget any of this. We have to talk about this.
Right. So, I mean, it's this, yeah, like you said, it's an elevator down to their interview where they're actually, we're peeling back the layers and we get the information like, oh, this is where 100 people had died. And as Kanai is trying to get back into the elevator in terror of all this, like, this dude just pulled the ring off of a corpse and is like, you're going to take this. She tries to escape, and Mamiya is there in the elevator and then stabs her in the heart with his black rose to grant her the power to revolutionize the world if she wants to fix her issues. It's an intense turn.
We also learned that apparently that black rose is from the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Which is referencing it now as like a location almost. Because like I'm thinking like, okay, this flower is growing in a certain place. Or is it literally just mailed from them? But it's just like there's this glass case that has like droplets of water hitting it, the flower itself. Like what? Yeah, there's like so much symbolism there that is not explained.
Right.
But yeah, so it all leads into a duel.
Right.
And this duel happens between Kanai and, let's see, it was Utena, right? So
right, in the arena where we've had all the duels before, but now the layout is a bit different. We have a bunch of classroom desks that have filled the whole area that currently have vases with flowers on them. But then also painted now on the floor are like red chalk outlines of people who have died.
Right.
It's
just a CSI episode in the making.
Right. They're disturbing a crime scene, which is a crime in itself.
So this duel happens, and forgive me, but why were they dueling again? What was Kanai's issue with Utena? It was mostly because of Anthy, right?
Yes, so it has nothing to do with Utena. It was about her distaste of Anthy, because Anthy always gives her a cold smile, and she just can't deal with it anymore. And part of what the Black Rose is trying to do is to remove Anthy as the Rose Bride, kill her, and replace her with Mamiya. So they're using this woman who also has it out for Anthy to try and get her to do it.
See, I wasn't quite sure if they would have to kill Anthy to make this happen, but yeah, apparently. So the stakes are higher now, too.
Yeah, it's not just, oh, who wants to be engaged to her? It's, we're going to murder her.
Yeah. So this duel happens. You know, Kanai loses. We're getting more imagery of that prince, the power of the prince or whatever, coming down from the castle, basically giving Utena the ability to win.
Mm-hmm.
And this imagery of the prince that kind of flashes seems to surprise Kanai. But yeah, that all happened. I do think that Kanai's observations of Anthy is pretty valid when it comes to her being cold and her being potentially ruthless or just completely like dead inside, or she called her alien, like, I believe.
Right.
But there's definitely like, I guess I'm giving some words to it, but there is Anthy just... There's something strange about her, and it's probably not her fault, you know, like, she's probably just, like, a normal person. Mm-hmm. I think we ended the last arc with some predictions and things. We're trying to talk about Anthy and, like, what or who she is, and, you know, we still don't really know, but there was something about that comment about her, like, oh, I gave Anthy a scarf, and then she used it to clean her glasses, and I said, don't do that. And she just looked at me with this cold, cold stare, like, never forget those eyes. And she just smiled and said, okay, you know, like, just went about her day. It's like, there is something weird about her. So yeah, I'd probably fight a duel too to get her out of the way, but I don't know.
So now you're saying that you're on the Black Rose side. We need to kill Anthy.
You know, I'd probably fit in for some reason. I don't know. But yeah, that's something. And when the duel ends, we get this scene with Soji. And Soji's just like, yeah, all of these dead bodies are makeshift duelists, and they were made by freezing their hearts. So end of world did that? End of the world or something?
It's not the bodies in there that are the makeshift duelist. It was Kanai who he made into a makeshift duelist, and that she does not have any potential of being a duelist, so had just decided to use her emotions as means of controlling her, but then it's not enough. So he needs real duelists to be able to do what he wants to do. It's unclear, I don't think, what the connection is between the body that he takes the ring off of, and then once the duelist loses, that body goes into the incinerator. So I don't know, we'll get there. It's strange.
I mean, because I thought there was the comment. I understand what you're saying. I observed it as the comment was made that those duelists were frozen in time, like they had died, but their ability, you know, it's definitely implied that the skills of these dead duelists are basically transported by that Black Rose and or the Black Ring into whoever wears it. So, well, yeah. So Kanai got the Black Rose stabbed into her, but the Black Ring might be what actually gives that ability. Yeah, that was all very interesting. And so there's like 100 duelists prepared. So I thought that was very wild.
Yeah. And then after this duel, after she is defeated, Kanai does not remember anything of the sort. She's back to normal and totally fine, but she doesn't remember anything about the seminar, about the ring, about the sword, anything. So she's not a good way, good person to ask, like, hey, what's going on? Complete yeah. amnesia of the event.
Yeah. And then, you know, the episode ends. It ends with what I call the creepy big bro vibes.
Yeah. Anthy is visiting her brother again for the weekend, and then she takes off her glasses. He's sitting there with his shirt halfway undone and beckoning her over, and then the...
he tells her it's been a week.
Yeah.
It's been 7 days. You know, it's been a week of time. And Choo Choo wouldn't even go. He wouldn't refuses. Even go with her. Like, Una even says, yo, like, Choo-Choo, why are you hanging out with me? Don't you want to go be with Anthy like you always are? Yeah, no.
And he's just like, reading his tiny newspaper.
Yeah. Oof. That was weird. I don't know what's up with him. I feel like, you know, it implies some weird stuff there. I'm yep. wondering if he's doing something like brainwashing her or influencing her. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe, you know, maybe it's like an Evangelion thing. Maybe you know, he's just putting her into a weird tank and being like, yo, we're going to erase your memories and just keep you brainwashed. I don't know. There's something that's really strange happening in this anime now.
Like you said, it's a different show.
It's completely different.
I think that is a good place to end it for that episode. Do you want to jump onto the next one?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Before that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back to talk about episode 15. And we're back to talk about this time, episode 15, The Landscape Framed by Kozue, that originally aired July 9th, 1997. Jared, would you again let us know what happens in this episode?
Sure. Kozue dates many male students in order to keep the attention of her twin brother, Miki. Her love for him borders on desperate obsession and is tainted by their doubled past. Well, I guess they're twins, so yeah. They're troubled. Troubled past. Mikage and Mamiya decide that the best way to defeat Utena is to create duelists who have holds on their student council members' hearts, enabling them to steal their respective dueling swords from their bodies and use them to fight. Kozue and Miki become the first victims of this experiment.
This episode was storyboarded and directed by Takafumi Hoshikawa. He has worked on other things such as Aldenoa.Zero, XL Saga, and X, the movie from the 90s.
sorry. I'm just thinking, like, Aldenoa Zero, strong start, and then it ends. And then I'm like, X the movie, I barely remember it. Excel Saga, I know some people like it. Sorry, I'm just, like, going nope. through my head of, like, what?
an illustrious and strange career. Again, written by Yoji Enokido, who does most of the show. Animation supervised by Nobuyuki Takeuchi, who did animation for Berserk, Digimon Movie 2, also a Hosoda film, Magic Users Club, Ponyo, and Tenchi Universe.
Wait, did Hosoda do Digimon Movie 2?
Yes, he
was... Or just Digimon Movie?
Well, he did Digimon Movie 2 in Japan, which in America was actually a combination of movies 1, 2, and 3.
Wait, did we just get one movie? It was a big combo?
Yes. Well, we got
what?
We got further movies here, just not theatrically. But yeah, Digimon the movie in America is actually Digimon movies 1, 2, and 3 what? In Japan. Yeah.
No, you're blowing my mind.
No, it's all true. I believe the first one is just called Digimon. The second one is called Our War Game. The third one is like what? Hurricane something, Legend of the Golden Digi Medals. It's
Did yeah. he direct all three of them?
No, he only did the second one, which if you've ever watched it is
what?
Beat for beat exactly what happens later on when he makes Summer Wars. It's the same story.
Well, yeah, I've always picked up on that. I've always known that, but I thought that what we got is the Digimon movie was completely directed by him.
Nope, just the second part.
No.
Tai and Izzy stuff, yep.
No. I just know that movie also had a slamming soundtrack.
Oh.
You run around. I run it. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I listen to that soundtrack all the time. I love ska because of that. So thanks.
The digi-rap.
Oh, goodness.
Okay.
Before we go down that train even further, let's.
The Shinkansen episode.
Yep. Here we go. Director's commentary from Ikuhara for episode 15. There is something that happened quite a long time ago. I told a certain girl that I loved her, but she turned me down. I'd thought there were good vibes between us. To think that it was all in my head. Why? I love my big brother, she said. That's a lie. That story was fiction. The reason sexuality is so often expressed in brother-sister relationships in the world of fiction is probably because there's the illusion that blood relationships are eternal. It's the dream of the eternal lover. Continuing with the lie, I tried pathetically, refusing to back down. I couldn't accept it. But your brother and sister, she declared that she was not a woman. Then she said, my brother isn't a man. So what are you exactly? My brother's body is a part of me, and my body is a part of him, she said. And that's that.
Oh, that's some anime bullshit. It's like I usually like to call it.
Oh, yeah.
Anime. I guess this one's really knocking right on the front door of these topics.
Yeah, let's hear what your notes were for this episode about Kozue.
Yeah, I mean, my first note just says Miki and Kozue. Like, they're back. You know, this episode kind of continues on the vibes of the episode we had before in episode 14.
Oh, yeah.
But we learn pretty quickly that the hearts of the student council members might be able to produce strong swords, and that those swords need to be wielded by strong people, or like the strong people need to be able to like pull the sword out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's told to us probably by Soji.
Yes, that's right.
I had to scroll back up. Soji and Mamiya. Is it Mamiya? Right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, but, you know, not as many notes for this one. That we learned that Kozue is actually finally jealous mm-hmm. of something. Because, like, when we saw that first arc, it was Miki was trying to hear the sound from his childhood again with Kozue, right?
Right.
But Kozue is just, like, interested in boys, and turns out she was never really good at playing piano. But now, like, the tables have turned suddenly, and the jealousy is so strong, or her potential obsession with her brother is so strong that she dates men that he would not approve of on purpose just to get his attention.
Yes.
So, we're going deep, and we haven't even, like, reached the elevator yet.
No, so. I mean, we also learned that she's got a bit of a mean streak in her. I mean, we have that opening scene where she's flirting with a boy, and then Miki stops and sees her before he's approached by his music tutor, who's getting awfully handsy with this young boy and getting very close, and she gets upset, and she like pushes the other guy that she's flirting with out of the way. And then we later see the guy, the teacher, running away and dropping all of his music papers, and Juri confronts her, like, oh, I had heard that teacher fell down the stairs, but it wasn't sure if he was pushed or fell himself. And then he had gotten a phone call saying, the next time your accident happens, it'll be even worse. So it's clear Kozue brings up, she says that he was getting too close to her brother, and she wouldn't let anybody sully him. So now she's out trying to murder teachers, which, I mean, to be fair, again, he was getting awfully handsy with an underage boy. Not cool, but, you know, call the police, Kozue.
I noticed that, and I was going to, like, take a note on it, and then Kozue, I don't know, I guess I just focused on Kozue more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, this is, like, there's weird relationship stuff in this show.
Oh, yeah, well, strap in.
Okay. So turns out that Kozue is really jealous of Anthy because Miki wants to just keep playing piano now with Anthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why play piano with Kozue if Kozue just sucks? I haven't figured out yet if like these characters are getting invitations to go to these interviews, they're calling it.
Right.
But it seems like they're being invited, or they're seeking it because they're just desperate. But they go into the I called it the elevator of doom for an interview. And they don't actually show what happens down there fully, but it's clear that, you know, she was willing to accept the persona or the abilities of some other duelist, just like Kanai. Well, mm-hmm. Kanai didn't accept it.
No.
But Kozue is like, yeah, I'm ready. So that all happens. And she actually pulls a sword from Miki's chest.
And she's playing like, piano to, like, kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was different. I'm like, you don't know how to play piano that well. And Miki's like, what? And then Miki said, what? Again? Like, you're wearing this ring, this dark ring? How did you... And then she just, like, pulls a sword out of his chest. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's dead. But we're not really sure.
Not at this point, no.
No. Oh, God. Rest in peace. I hope he doesn't die. He was kind of like a nice boy. But so it goes. So yeah, this duel happens with Utena because obviously she's the engaged to the Rose Bride, right? With Anthy. Right. But Kozue loses, and it was an interesting battle. We got a cool little moment in this duel where, mm-hmm. like, was it Utena just like reaches the sword back and Anthy gracefully touches the sword and gives it that special power that I definitely will not remember the name of.
The thing that she had basically done for Toga during their duel at the end of the last arc.
Yeah.
The blade didn't change color or anything, but clearly she's imbuing it with the power of the Rose Bride that Toga had talked about.
Right.
That this is the true ability that the duelist with the Sword of Dios can accomplish.
Yeah. Well, no matter what happens here, as hard as Kozue tries, she loses. Mm-hmm. And we, like, see a coffin going into the fire again. So that's two bodies down, two dead bodies.
In the 98 power of, to go.
Yes, of these dark rose rings that we didn't say it in the episode before, but when they lose, the rings just, like, turn into ash or something. They mm-hmm. just break. That's fitting because of the fire. Wow.
Right.
Connecting the dots.
Exactly.
But yeah, and guess what? Miki's fine, which is Ooh, great.
Thank goodness.
Miki is fine, but these people who get, as you said with Kanai, like these people who get either stabbed with a dark rose or whatever's happening here, they don't remember what's going on. So Kozue didn't remember either. So yeah, that's most of my notes. I'm saving right. my last note.
Well, the episode ends here, but. The episode ends the same way the last one did. It's been another week. So Anthy goes to visit her brother and shirt halfway undone, closed the shutters, nighttime.
Yes. Well, my last note was that I like the marionette girls now.
Yes, our new shadow play girls.
They were like, I thought they were a bit annoying in the first season. I mean, they were interesting to see every time, and the commentary that you would read about from the director, right?
Mm-hmm.
The commentary that you're reading usually has something to do with these scenes. I guess I'm just thinking about the UFO aliens, but there's definitely... So the commentary you're reading had to like relate to those moments, it felt like. But now these scenes are happening with the marionette girls, and they're just kind of... sort of related to the episode. I have no idea what the Shinkansen had to do with this episode, but
so
I like bullet trains, so
so you're on board because they were talking about bullet trains.
Yeah, that's why I like them though.
I had read some things about that specific one yesterday, which talks about that this thing that was shown was basically illustrating the roles that we play in society. Even if they don't make sense at the time, we still do them. This woman is working on the bullet train as a waitress, so she's got to go up and down with her cart, telling people, hey, here's the things, hey, just want to let you know what you've got, what we have in stock, anything you want. Meanwhile, the other guy is the only person on this train car, so why are we doing this? Like, you don't need to announce to the whole train car over and over again what's there. I'm the only person here, but he's not going to, you know, initiate any conversation with her. She's just going to be the passenger on the train who just gets a thing, like, from the cart, and then that's that. You know, it's just kind of an interesting commentary, because it's like, yeah, I think we've all kind of been there, where we're in a situation where it doesn't make sense for us to necessarily do these very specific things in a social context, but we do it still anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing. I don't know how it exactly pertains to the themes of this episode of obsession and the past. And yeah, it's interesting, but yeah.
I don't know. It just kind of hit up the Japan vibes for me. I just want to be on a bullet train going however many kilometers per hour those things go.
And we had hot springs last episode and then the bullet train this episode.
It's killing me with the strings here, you know. Not a whole lot of like Japanese references at times in this, and all of a sudden we're getting episode after episode. Well, I guess we did get the curry episode last time.
But, true, very true.
Well, anyways. But yeah, oh man, the creepy big bro vibes again. I don't know what's going on with her taking off her glasses. Like, is she supposed to look like the prince? Like, is he in love with the prince and like she's the sister? I feel like maybe it was her brother being the prince. It's like, was he in love with the prince? And I mean, there was some weird stuff discussed at the end of the last arc.
Right.
Where if I were to look at it, which I have right here. Right. So the prince was quiet and unawakened, right?
Correct.
And he said that the final stage is revolution and that both of them, both people will get something from it to reap the rewards. So I wonder if like the prince is awakened, but maybe he's destined to be with Akio. Oh god, I don't know. I'm trying to like figure this out. There's something weird, like creepy Akio.
Yeah, well, it's the start of a new arc, so we're not gonna have all the answers, but there's questions a brewing.
I'm just trying to think of new things for our bucket that we have going of predictions.
Right.
The prediction bucket.
We'll make sure to update that bucket when we get there. But are you ready to go on to the next episode, or do you have anything more to say about this one?
Ooh, episode 16, Sebastian Dior.
Episode 16, The Cowbell of Happiness, that originally aired July 16th, 1997. Jared, give us the long explanation of what this episode was about.
First and foremost, I just need to say that it's Cowbell-do.
Cowbell-do.
of happiness. Here's the... Yeah, this is kind of... The length of this summary really matches how I feel. Nanami receives a golden cowbell, thinking that... What? It was silver. Thinking that it's expensive designer jewelry, she wears it everywhere until she begins to turn into a cow.
Welcome to Utena, man. This episode was storyboarded by Hiroshi Nikishiori, who worked on Azumanga Daioh, Cromartie High, Morabito, and Outlaw Star. Azumanga Daioh and Cromartie High, that makes a lot of sense for this episode. Because directed by Shigeo Koshi, who works on Black Clover, Doraemon, and Rurouni Kenshin. Written this time by Ryota Yamaguchi, who worked on Cowboy Bebop, the Escaflowne movie. I don't know why you worked on this episode.
they couldn't find anyone else.
Animation supervised by Yoshiaki Tsubata, who works on Attack on Titan, Dragon Quest Die, the 1992 movie that we never got here, Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, and other things. And finally, we have our director commentary from series director Ikuhara, who says, "To tell you the truth, I didn't know the Dona Dona song. While we were meeting about the plot, I heard someone on staff say, 'This is Dona Dona material, huh?' I found the song and had a listen. Nice. I decided to use it. Two versions of it, in fact. Bring me a blanket, someone, and so on."
Soon.
This is... This was an episode, which is kind of nice to have a breather from everything that's thrown us in the last two.
Yeah, I mean, I do not disagree. this episode, written by Ryota Yamaguchi from Cowboy Bebop and Escaflowne, the movie. I joke that there's like elements of this series that remind me of Escaflowne. And it's just because Toga looked like Alan Shazar at times.
Yeah.
But... Oh, man, we didn't talk about it. Whatever episode had... Oh, it's this one.
It's this Toga. One at the beginning.
It's not in my notes, but I'm remembering it, that Toga is still, like, sitting there in a chair in, like, a dark room listening to Well, music. Not his voice now, but music. Yeah.
Hasn't gone to school, hasn't eaten.
I wonder when he's going to come back. Well, speaking of eating. so, I mean, it's an interesting setup. I guess out of like the filler episodes that we've seen Nanami in,
mm-hmm.
that this one I think is one of my favorites so far. I mean, if you were to even ask me like what other filler episodes we got with her, I could only think of the curry.
It was the curry one, and then also Operation Anthe is a Weirdo episode. Oh,
yeah, with the octopus in the closet.
Yes.
And then is it considered a filler episode with the... I can never remember his name. I know it's not Kawabuki.
Oh, Suwabuki?
But Kawabuki Boy, Golden Boy, he was that like a filler
episode?
Yeah,
I would say so. I mean, it's not really filler by definition because we're not adapting something and padding it out, but it's just, it's a comic relief episode, which you got to have sometimes.
That's what those are. so, but I mean, this one, I think I'll remember a bit more, where we have, ooh, good rhyme, Sebastian Dior. So like what? Nanami is like hosting this big party. It's like a big gala event.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been back in this area, I feel like, since
Toga's birthday.
Yeah. And she's doing this to show off some like fancy jewelry, like a brooch or something that she had. Like,
yeah.
Man, so, okay, cool. That was going to happen. And then Jury walks in wearing like a gold necklace. And Jury, like Miss Mature over there, just like walking in and she's like the eye catch of the whole area, steals the show until this bell arrives. And apparently from Sebastian Dior. And it's a big silver bell, so... Of course, Nanami picks it up, she puts it on, and she's like, hello, this is my new cowbell, and just wears it for the whole episode.
Yeah, it's a brand thing, so she's got to have it and show it off, and it's a fashion statement. She's going to wear it everywhere, to school and to everywhere. Gym class.
You know, there's a weird dream that happens where Nanami and Toga is there, and like basically like in a farm stall. And he's like feeding her with a pitchfork. She's just like totally into it, and her, it's like, what?
Her shadow is a full-on cow.
Oh man. Yeah. Oh man, the foreshadowing. So, and then like it cuts to like a thing of beef, and I think that's when he said itadakimasu.
And that starts her awake from her dream.
Oh man. But yeah, her personality starts changing. Like all of the students are, one, wondering why she's wearing the cowbell, like they're staring at her, but two, she's changing into a more patient person, meaning she's slowing down
and more content.
More content, and she's eating a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more.
More.
Oh, that was my next note, literally. More. Yeah. And we actually got another cool scene with the marionette girls, because that's what I call them now. So the marionette girls happens, and I'm not sure if this happened, but as like a comedic effect, like, Utena talked at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they talked at the end of it. And I'm like, wait, I always thought this happened separately, but now like the scenes are freezing and they're talking over the scenes instead of it always cutting to like some area.
Right.
That's new. So I don't know. I'm liking that. And I'm like, wait, they talked over this. Was this like self-referential? Like, what is this? So, yeah, I mean, there's not much else in this episode except for the big finale
Well,
go ahead. Was there something I missed?
No, you're building up to it. Throughout this episode, we've seen whenever we show Anthe, she is crocheting something.
Oh, man. That makes sense that, you know, was it Choo-Choo had the big red ball?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That makes sense now, the yarn ball. Yeah, so it gets to this beautiful scene where we learned that Nanami doesn't have a Sebastian Dior. She has a Kaustian Dior bell, which apparently Anthe like ordered in. And when Nanami was wearing it, yeah. Okay, I just got to say, she basically turns into a cow.
Yeah, she straight up turns into a cow.
I think it was metaphorical, because for like a while, I thought that like this was some weird ploy from the, basically the evil version of the student council.
Soji.
What are they called? The
Black Soji. Rose. The Black Rose Gang.
The Black Rose Gang. There's a name for that. Well, anyways, I thought maybe this was all a ploy and that they were trying to do something with Utena. It was literally just her turning into a cow. So Anthy was crocheting a red sweater. Yeah. That's what made Nanami go wild. I this is like the weirdest words that have come out of my mouth all day. I don't know. This was something else.
Yeah, it's a wild episode. It's just very fun. I don't think we talked about it previously, but Nanami is now in charge of the student council in lieu of her brother being away.
That's right.
So strange dynamics where now their new leader is turning into a cow, but she's fine. She turned back to normal in the end after Utena was able to stab the cowbell off of her thanks to Tsuwabuki throwing her a pitchfork.
That's right. Right, what right.
A strange, strange show.
I can't say anything else beyond that except we cannot forget the epic cow song.
Yes.
Donna. Is that what this is? Like,
yeah. Oh, it's so good and weird. Just the perfect. Oh, Utena is so fun and intense. And then it's just weird. And gosh, I love it. It's something else. You're not going to find this kind of show everywhere.
Yep. That's about it. definitely an interesting turn. It seems like, you know, we're going to have Nanami for a while. I'm curious. I was wondering if in this episode she was going to be dueling and everything, but turns out we're not quite getting there yet. But I feel like Nanami will be used again at some point, and I'm assuming she'll pull a sword out of Toga or something. I don't know. It's just a guess. But
it's a good guess. We'll see.
Because right now he's pulling an Asuka, so he's just kind of useless.
Exactly.
He's just really sad for a while.
So we wanted to add some things to your predictions for the show going forward. What did you want to add? We were talking about how I think you brought something up about Soji and Mamiya just a couple of minutes ago, but I can't recall exactly what it was.
You know, I'm not so sure about them yet. I don't think I have anything about Soji and Mamiya yet, but I think that Akio.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Akio is probably brainwashing Anthy, who I think might be related to or the actual engaged to the prince or is the brother, because they both have purple hair. Mm-hmm. I think there's something going on where I think this is actually Akio in love with the prince, but I'm not sure. But that's where I'm going with it right now.
Okay. So we're going to put in Akio is probably brainwashing Anthy, ? Is Anthy related to the prince, engaged to him?
Yeah, there's something about it. Like, they just seem so similar. Oh, and the fact that Anthy takes her glasses off. She looks less feminine. I don't know. She looks... Yeah, there's something going on.
It's a mystery, and that's half the fun is untangling the web.
Yeah, I'm just Googling it now.
No, don't Google nothing.
I won't do it. I won't give you a heart attack.
Good.
Not look. I don't know anything.
Let's keep it that way.
Yes, my knowledge of this series. Yes, my knowledge of the series is completely blank at this point. Like, all I had with the first arc was that I had watched the first episode and had like a general vibe.
Right.
But yeah, this is given some very different vibes now.
I'm going to take a look ahead and see to make sure that next time we're going to stick with our usual three episodes. But, you know, I don't know how two-parters are going to show up.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think we are good. Well, might want to say that we've got one and then two, and then the next one might be might be considered a two-parter. We'll figure it out and we'll talk about it And we'll get into it because, whew, there's some good stuff. It might be a good idea to tackle four episodes next time because then we've done three. We can do four next time, and then there will only be three left to close out the arc.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's shorter.
But there's 100 episodes. There's like 98 guys left. How are they going to do all 98 in just...
It's a big arena.
Oh, no.
They all play a game of Fortnite, and whoever lasts the longest is the new Rose Bride. Wow.
This is getting strangely too real for me.
It's too real, and it's strange enough for it to make sense in the universe of Utena. Is there a cow skin? I'm sure there's a cow skin.
All I can think of is that there's someone out there that has those. Well, I'm going to guess someone has those cells of that, and I am happy for whoever has
that. No, I think you need to add it to your list of cells to hunt down is... Cow Nanami.
I feel like I feel like the animators on this episode just kind of took the cells and burned them. They're just like, this can't see the light of day ever again.
None can hold this kind of power.
Sadly, that would happen, and they would be burned at times.
Right.
I don't know. That episode was something else, especially after episode 14 and 15.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, especially 14 was just crazy. It was such a new experience. It did things that even like the darker episodes in the first arc like did not do.
No. It definitely upped it a whole new level.
Yeah, and they used some of the characters we had met before, so that was pretty smart. I mean, you know, they reintroduced some characters, so it looks like in the next episode we're going to have Juri and her love from her past.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember that right, it was like an awkward love triangle thing. Where,
right.
Yeah.
Well, you got it. Your memories do not betray you.
Oof, oh, that's good, because I don't know. There's betrayal in this anime.
For sure. But we'll close it out here. We can look forward to talking about that next time. Thank you, everybody, for joining us and listening. Just started the Black Rose arc. There's some more to go. And if you're listening to this after the podcast is over, just go ahead, keep binging. But also make sure that you rewatched the show to go with our commentary, with our talking about it. I think that would be very, very fun for you to do. Thank you to our sponsors, Jared. Where can people find you?
You can find me on the internet at Hot Anime Vlogger, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, sometimes on Snapchat, but not really.
Instagram.
But yeah, Hot Anime Vlogger. Where can we find you, Randy?
You can find me at Saber_Breaker, just Twitter. I'm there posting art or talking about nerdy things. It's kind of who I am. But anyway, thank you for, again, enjoying the show. Please subscribe, tell your friends, post a review so other people can know about it, especially the Utena fans in your life. That'd be great. That would help us out. Take care, and we will talk to you next time.
Moo.
Theme song Zettai Unmei Moko Shiroku, provided by Astrophysics. You can find their music on Bandcamp and YouTube, or follow them on Twitter at AstroSynth.